Good evening. My name is Mae Brussel. The name of this program is World Watchers, and it is program number 840, January the 11th, 1988. Somebody told me last week that I said 1938. This week, it's 88. I want to say before the program begins that the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kazoo staff or board of directors. This hour of World Watchers is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz is growing consciousness for over 20 years. Santa is answering a lot of mail in Santa Ana. It's Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is growing consciousness. Before I begin the more serious part of this broadcast, or maybe this is serious, Newsweek, January the 11th, 1988, has an article on fashion for dogs. It is called Let Us Pray for the Animals. And there are costumes for these dogs. One is called Piety. And there's a picture of a dog wearing a yarmulke, embroidered the Jewish prayer cap. And the article says that 500 embroidered yarmulkes with elastic chin straps were sold for these dogs. It didn't say if all the dogs were Jewish, but the yarmulkes were sold. And maybe there's some Gentile dogs wearing the yarmulke and fooling the Jewish dogs. People's Daily World had an article January the 6th regarding the very secret Vanunu trial in Israel, where he's been charged with giving out information about Israelis' atomic bombs and also neutron bomb. And a woman from Connecticut or New England, Judy Zimmet, who is evidently close to the Vanunu family. I have corresponded with her, but outside of one tape on the neutron bomb and Cameroon, I don't believe she was interested in any more material on this. She did testify at the closed-door trial that Mordecai Vanunu was kidnapped from England, and then he was injected in Rome, and this was with the help of the Central Intelligence Agency, the woman who got him as far as Rome, where he was injected and picked up by the Mossad, is from the United States and evidently is a CIA person. On the talk show part of my program, which many of you don't get, if you just get the tape on World Watchers, there's been not a lot of discussion, but a little bit of discussion about a murder trial that's taking place right now up in Santa Cruz. The person on trial is Richard Bandler, 37 years old, and there was a long article in the San Francisco Chronicle today on the case. The Monterey Herald has had very little. The title is Sex, Drugs, Murder, the Classic Santa Cruz Case. And it involves a person named Richard Bandler, who is supposed to be a psycholinguistic guru. He is expert and a master of mind control. The trial not only has to do with a lot of drugs and bizarre sex, but there are references in there to the Central Intelligence Agency and the military special armed forces. And, of course, in the article, it even suggests as a part of a joke that maybe Ollie North is involved in this case. This is going to be a big story. I understand the courtrooms are full. It's a long article in the Chronicle today. A woman named Corrine Christensen was murdered, and a friend of both of the two, the one that's being charged with the murder and the woman who was murdered, claims that Mr. Bandler did the murder and that he threw the gun into the river in Santa Cruz, the bay there. It was retrieved, and the best friend of the two people it will be the primary witness, and it seems like a pretty clear-cut case, except there's a lot of national attention now, and the gist of this one article today said that part of the testimony of Mr. Marino suggested that he was afraid to testify and that he thought Bandler or the Central Intelligence Agency wanted him dead. So the CIA is coming into the trial. What appears as a simple murder case may have a lot more political implications than we know of right now. Now, last week, I was talking about a corporation called Merex, an arms depot, international arms company, that is linked to Ollie North and General John Singlaub and the secret team in the White House of Secord and Hakim, the people who emanated out of Stanford Technology Training Group and the Pentagon and the intelligence community. And I cited an article from the Los Angeles Times on Merex, the International Arms Agency, and how the weapons were sent to Savannah, Georgia, to the address of Colonel James P. Atwood. And then I continued with a section of Parapolitics by Jonathan Marshall in an article called The Company, that Atwood was the liaison, Colonel Atwood was working with Frank Turple. And the company was both the CIA and private people, if you can separate the two. I don't know how you'd do it. The article involved drugs and murder, largest drug smuggling operation in the United States. And Mr. Etheridge, John Etheridge, the aide to John Jenrette, the congressman, was a liaison between Frank Turple, who was part of Stanford Technology, and Atwood, the same Atwood that is in charge of Merrick's Depot. And then I continued last week just to review for you Colonial Dignidad, the colony in Chile that I've been talking about since 1979 on the air, and the money that came into Colonial Dignidad from Gerhard Mertens, the German munitions maker, who's the owner of this same company, Merex, and the links to Chile, to the fascism in the government of Pinochet, torture, and then this company and Merex has a route that goes a little farther, and tonight I'm going to take you to Iran with that and a few bits about Gerhard Mertens and Colonia Dignitad, because George Bush's name is in the news this week, every headline story, and it will continue. What did he know about the arms deals? He has been caught lying. And George Bush, of course, I've referred to as Killer Bush through the years because of his role as CIA director when Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffat were killed and Air Cuba was blown up and a lot of other murders of important people. And George Bush worked with those persons that were part of Colonial Dignidad, and yet none of those scandals ever touched him. And maybe in time these pieces will become more open because of the drug running, the assassinations, and the fascism that weave around George Bush and have for many, many years. Now, somebody from Germany who was at my home, she came to see me, wrote an article for a German publication about Colonia Dignitat, and I had compared it to Jonestown, and she was particularly interested in that. And I want to share just parts of her article from Germany with you this evening. She wrote, "The German settlement in Chile, Colonial Dignidad, which, according to the United Nations reports, works for the Chilean intelligence service as a torture camp, has obtained a new source of income. At the end of 1980, the Chilean government granted Colonial Dignidad the permission to mine titanium," and that's an important mineral that has been suggested or linked also with the Atwood, Frank Turple connections, Jenrette connections in the United States. The colony was allowed to start mining that. "This is a metal which is being used in the war industry and which is in great demand in the world market. Mining of titanium requires substantial financing, and for that purpose, connections to German arms dealers have been established. For about one year, in the District Court of Bonn, Germany, an extraordinary performance has been taking place. In the courtroom, 205 are embraced. The arms dealer, Gerhard Mertens, the fellow who funds Colonia, with brotherly affection for his friend, Hans Jürgen Blank. He kissed him on both cheeks. Mr. Blank has just arrived from Chile. He's one of the directors of the German settlement, Colonia Dignitad, which for 4 years he's been fighting against the information coming out by the United Nations and Amnesty International telling about the tortures down at Colonia. The German arms dealer Merton joined him in the fight to stop the information from coming out. Since his visit of the military dictatorship in Chile, with several frequent visits to the German colony, he said the Chilean conditions for Dignitad Group involves industriousness and know-how. They have built a paradise. Mertens is unknown, this author said, in the Federal Republic of Germany. He appeared in court earlier in 1975 because of his involvement in illegal arms dealings. He had sent arms to Pakistan and India when they were at war with each other, which is against the law, German law. However, he was acquitted because he works for the BND, which is the German CIA. In 1963-64, and this is important because Martin Bormann was down at Colonia Dignitad and has been linked to the murder of John Kennedy in November of 63, the article goes in 63-64, when the arms dealings were taking place, the BND was under the direction of former Nazi General Reinhard Gehlen. And since that time, Mertens has had connections with the German intelligence service. And, of course, I've written about the Nazi connections to the murder of John Kennedy and the Galen connections to that matter. And then it goes on to say, for his Chilean paradise, he seems to be the public relations agent. He founded a friendship circle for a colonial dignitad, and he intends to register it as a nonprofit organization. It involves right-wing journalist Gerhard Lowenthal in Germany on the German TV, and Mertens propagates the idea of Colonia being a paradise. And then the article goes on with a history of Colonia, which I've shared with you on the air before, and I'll do more details of the torture. I've done some of it, but Jack Anderson has very descriptive phrases that I'll share in not maybe next week or the week after. But I just want to finish part of the short article. And it said, Gerhard Mertens, the weapons dealer, has an wonderful opinion of Pinochet in Chile. He also has good connections to the former DINA boss, Manuel Contreras. And that's the connection to Mr. Strauss in Bavaria and to the murder of Letelier and Moffat and to George Bush's CIA role, Manuel Contreras, and with Vernon Walters, who was in the CIA, who's now head of the United States Embassy, representing us at the United Nations. And it says that Mertens worked closely with Manuel Contreras. In the winter of 1975-76, Contreras traveled under a false name to Germany. 2 days later, he flew with his friend Mertens to Iran. George Bush was CIA director in this time period from January 1976 to 77, when Contreras, who had contact with America, with the Central Intelligence Agency, with these hit teams that were to kill two people, blow them up in Washington, and he was flying with Mertens, who a big funder of Colonia Dignitat, the torture base, and Michael Townley came out of Colonia and was part of the group that hired the people that killed Letelier. He was in the CIA and worked for Dean at the same time. So now we have these lovely creatures over in Iran, a base where Richard Helms and Frank Turpel and Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and Richard Secord and Albert Hakim all nested comfortably in Iran around these time periods. And then he concludes this article saying, on this occasion, he learned all about Contreras, Mertens did, for against him, the U.S. authorities have issued an arrest warrant for the assassination of Orlando Letelier, the former Secretary of State of the Allende government in Washington, D.C. And this is part of an article that was sent to me, written for German publication. It was sent to me in 1981, Gerhard Mertens. I'll do more on Colonia in the next weeks to come, but I do want to spend the greater part of this evening, and I have a tendency to put things off, but some other news just simply presses, and I have to slip it in and then get back to, and I will be going back to Colonia and to the occult, the what's going on in the news with the occult and the murders currently that are taking place in the history. I've gotten some good articles from segments of books, and I want to thank you for sending them, and we'll be getting back to Michael Aquino and the occult and the services in Himmler's castle, because all of this leads to that place. It isn't separate from it. But the man in the news this week is, of course, George Bush, and a person working very hard to explain how Bush was in on early shipments of arms to Iran, that it isn't fair to limit this to 1985 or 86, that this was going on just prior to or right after Ronald Reagan was elected, and massive amount of shipments were going, and Barbara Honegger got out a stack of material this week for press people for Washington, D.C. on the role of George Bush, and it certainly is timely, and I don't think that is going to go away very soon. Now, the news reports tell those memos that George Bush knew about arms to Iran. He certainly did, and he also knew about the trip of McFarland and Oliver North to Iran, and he suggested they wait until he comes back from Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is very big in the news, and it fits in, too, and not separate from George Bush and the colonial dignitat mentality of Contreras. After Bush got home from Saudi Arabia, then he met in his office Mr. Felix Rodriguez, a gentleman who wears Che Guevara's armband, who assisted Klaus Barbie in killing Che Guevara. Bush has met him at least two times while vice president of the United States, while all his shipments of arms were going to Iran and down to the Contras. He was meeting when he came home from Saudi Arabia. Then he was meeting with Felix Rodriguez, and that takes you right back to Colonia Dignitat, to Klaus Barbie, and the crowd down there and there's more connections to come. I don't want to confuse you with too many names or dates. But Bush's advisor, Donald Gregg, was meeting with Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez. He has two names, August the 8th, 1986. In October the 5th, Hassenfuss landed in Nicaragua and mentioned Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez almost immediately mentioned the name. Hassenfuss mentioned that name, and the story went right to George Bush's office right from that point. Now, I'm going to, if I have time, go through some of the news stories that are giving little pieces of George Bush's activities in between the lines if you read them carefully. But I want to do a good section on Lynn Nofziger, and I haven't done enough on WedTech or hardly anything. And one of the characters being brought to trial as of today is Lynn Nofziger, and he's one of the most interesting political figures of the whole past 20 years of the Reagan career, and along with Richard Nixon's career. And Time Magazine, March 16th, 1981, as soon as Ronald Reagan was sworn in, within 2 months, is titled "Thunderers on the Right: True Believers Will Make Noise in Policy in Sub-Cabinet Posts." Well, the true believer is sitting as a defendant in the docket today. And this article tells about Lynn Nofziger, the longtime Ronald Reagan loyalist, the true blue guardian of Reaganism, that after a decade of working for the Reagan presidency, he felt the cabinet left them out in the cold. So he had the position of appointing the sub-cabinet far right, the right-wing ideologues, because they want to cling out the Democrats. And Nofziger was using Nixon's old executive office building and getting Reagan's people to bring in the far, far right-wingers, such as Ernest Lefevre. Ernest Lefevre is on the board of a group run by the notorious Fritz Kramer, shared by Daniel Graham of Star Wars, and he brought in Fred Ickley, whose name comes over and over in the arms for Contra deals, the secret team inside the White House and National Security, Richard Pipes. And Nofziger was pretty big stuff in 1981. He went right into Washington and was going to cling out all of those leftists and bring in people the far, far right as easily as he could. So his trial started today, and he's been charged for two matters. One is for influencing and lobbying for WedTech Corporation. He left the White House and then used the White House for to try to get contracts, which he got, for WedTech, and then he got a huge fee as a lobbyist, and he used his influence there. Another important part of the Nofziger trial is that he's accused of using illegal contacts as soon as he left the White House with Mr. Jenkins, that he wanted to put into the maritime union civilians on U.S. ships and arrange the labor contracts for the maritime union. But he was influencing and lobbying for the National Security Council to get business for Fairchild Industries, and he had that kind of weight or power, the national security. Nofziger hasn't had the best reputation for the past 20 years, and he's been charged with lobbying for Fairchild Industry. Now, Fairchild Industry was run for, I don't know if it still is, he's still there, I believe, as vice president of Fairchild is Emmanuel Senekis, F-T-H-E-N-A-K-I-S, Emmanuel Senekis. Vice president of Fairchild. He came originally from ITT and Philco Ford Aerospace, and that Transcomputer International, a TCI corporation that I talk about so often. Senekis of Fairchild ran this TCI, and their subsidiary was International Imaging, which Albert Hakim bought when he came home from Iran and put General Secord on that with Thomas Kleins and Theodore Shackley, the entire cast of the Iran-Contra operations out of International Imaging. And on the board of TCI, and I've mentioned this before, is Otto von Bolschwing, and they list him as a former CIA operative from 1947 to 54, and a former SS intelligence officer, World War II. The information on the board of directors doesn't even blush to say that he was with the Waffen-SS, a member of the Gestapo, a long member, a member of the Nazi Party, Otto von Bolschwing's organization, and with Emmanuel Senekis from Vice President Fairchild, and they ran this TCI on the side. Lynn Nofziger went to college with Michael Deaver at San Jose State, which is right under the nose of the aerospace industry in Silicon Valley. That's about the only thing they have in common, one article said, but it seems that they had tentacles into the aerospace when Ronald Reagan was governor. He had Helene Von Dahm making his appointments for 8 years. She was the translator for TCI, and she also was a business partner of Lynn Nofziger. They own real estate in Washington, D.C., and also on the board of that company was John Paul Getty and Otto Berg of Goddard Space Flight Center and a lot of who's who of aerospace. So Lynn Nofziger was in the White House just a short time, and he's lobbying for Fairchild and the roots of Fairchild and Reagan and Von Dahm and Von Bolschwing. And Von Bolschwing was active, of course, traveling around Argentina and Chile. And the network of these people always repeats itself. So it's perfectly consistent for Nofziger to be lobbying for Fairchild. And that's one of the charges that is being made now. Of course, the subject of Manuel Sinaikis or Otto von Bolschwing won't come up at all. That isn't the way the news usually breaks. Now, the story that is very big that I want to spend as much time as possible with you and then get on to the subsidiaries, the branches of this story, is one from the Miami Herald that most of you haven't seen, or probably any of you, most people I know don't take it, but the minute the Iran-Contra affair happened in November of 86, I started taking the Miami Herald every single day. This is a story about HMO. HMO is Health Maintenance Organizations, and it's titled HMO Czar Charmed the VIPs. And this is about a gentleman who had this HMO, which is a health maintenance organization. His name is Mike Recary, R-E-C-A-R-E-Y. And through some very important people, and I'll tell you their names, he became the largest recipient of Medicare funding in the entire United States, in Florida. The taxpayers, you taxpayers out there, were giving him $30 million a month, $1 million a day, Mike Recary. And I'll tell you the people that got him the contracts. But he never could live up to the contracts. He was running a scam business from the very beginning. So he fled the country with his daughters and left $11 million in debts and goodness knows what else. And the people helping him were Jeb Bush, the son of the vice president, the son of the former CIA director, Lynn Nofziger, the same gentleman who's going to trial for lobbying for WedTech and lobbying for Fairchild, John Sears, Reagan's former campaign manager until William Casey came in, Glenn Ford, the actor who pitched for Recary, Paula Hawkins from Florida, Ron Brook, an aide to Governor Bob Graham, and Claude Pepper of Florida, a Democrat who was interested in hospital care and got the contracts for Recary. Now, this man, gentleman came from Cuba in 1961. His uncle was a very prosperous doctor there, Recary. His father was in export-import with Batista. They did very well in Cuba and then left Cuba to come to Florida. And Recary wanted to carry on his uncle's hospital plan, whatever it was in Cuba. I wasn't aware that Batista had such a wonderful medical clinic or plan there. So he used lobbyists to get him contracts with the Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C. And the person he used was Jeb Bush, one of the persons, the son of the vice president. But the scandalous part of this story is that when this gentleman first began getting into business, when Miguel, Mike, nickname Recary, began getting into business, it was suggested that he go to none other than Santos Traficante, the mafia boss, and Robert Vesco for his seed money for the hospital plans. Now, this is a little mind-boggling, not if you think of Lynn Nofziger, his career with the crime syndicates and the mafia and raising money for these campaigns, but the very persons that were asked to put up the original money for this character, Santos Traficante and Robert Vesco, were notorious in the intelligence community field. Santos Traficante was hired by the CIA, along with John Roselli, to plan poisons to kill Fidel Castro. He headed up those assassination squads, and in the Christic Institute suit, it begins with Santos Traficante and Roselli meeting with Robert Mayhew and setting up the so-called secret teams that weren't so secret. Now, Jeb Bush, the son of the vice president, I keep saying that, has a job in Florida. He works for the state of Florida. He called Mr. McLean Haddow, the former head of Health and Human Services, and he asked Mr. Haddow to please realize the solid background of McCary so that he could get these contracts, the largest single Medicare contract in the United States. And he didn't mention the original funds that built the hospital that McCary started with, or the approach to mafia boss Santo Trafficante and Robert Vesco, and the head of Health and Human Services gave the go-ahead for this $30 million every single month. Margaret Heckler replaced Haddow, and she found Jeb Bush persuasive. This is at a time when the father is saying he wants to stop drugs, and he's down in Florida campaigning against drug traffic of all hypocritical things, and his son is calling Health and Human Services and tilting the board to get contracts for a person whose seed money came from Trafficante and Vesco. As I say, he called Margaret Heckler. She replaced Haddow, and she said she found Jeb Bush very persuasive, and so she changed the conditions whereby McCary could get his $30 million a month. There was a catch in the amount of patients he'd have that were not regular Medicare patients, 50%. He got a three-year putting off avoidance of using 50% of the patients that weren't Medicare, and by having them all Medicare, he got a hunk of money, all this profit, that he began to get a $1 million home and expensive cars. And then Jeb Bush called Kevin Molay, a top official in Health and Human Services, and later Mr. Haddow, who signed the waiver for McCary, got $38,000 as a fee, and there were payoffs also for these great services. This story is one of a huge scam that involves the anti-Castro Cubans coming to this country, and it also, it not only the mafia seed money, but what is terrible about it is that they automatically got contracts for all of the Cubans, 10,000 of them, coming into this country to get medical care through these particular hospitals and also for thousands of Haitians. And Trafficante was hired to give poisons to Fidel Castro, and I'm wondering if these hospital plans had anything to do with the massive amount of AIDS that showed up with blacks in Florida, the Belgades area, or what would happen to these people when they came in, and how is it that all the Cubans, 10,000 and the Haitians, got immediate medical care at hospitals run by this cast of characters with their notorious background, when hospitalization in California costs $1,500 a day, and all over the country it is horrendous, who in the federal government was deciding that the Haitians and Cubans would get instant medical care and it would go in the hands of Mr. McCary? This is a shocking story, and I'll take a one-minute break and get back to the other part of this story, some more details about it. This is WedTech South, and there hasn't been anything on the wire services about the whole story.